Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Samach Dalet on the base, about 20 lines from the bottom or so, along the Gitan. Okay, so we've learned about Get Pashut and Get Mekusher. So here's a story in that connection. We mentioned the beginning of the story briefly at the beginning of the Perek, when we were discussing how exactly a Get Mekusher is written. Here's more details to the story. Ahum Mekusher to Asa L'Kameh de Rebbe. It happened that a Shtar Mekusher was brought to Rebbe. V'Amar Rebbe, Ein Zman was there, and Rebbe says there's no date on it. Amar Rebbe Shimon v'Rebbe l'Rebbe. So Rebbe Shimon, Rebbe's son, said to him, Shema ben Ksharov Mubla. Maybe the date is buried between the folds. Again, you know, we said that a get kosher, or get mekosher, according to the Rashbam and most Rishonim, is pleaded. Maybe it's written so deeply inside one of the folds that you don't notice it. Sure enough, Palya, he opened it up, Bechadya, and he found the date. Hoder Chozabe Rebbe Bebishus. Then Rebbe gives Reb Shimon a look, a sharp look, meaning, in other words, that he assumed that Reb Shimon had written this shtar. And so the Rashbam says two possibilities. One is that Rebbe didn't like the idea of people writing a get mekosher at all. Even though the Mishnah says that it's a legitimate thing, nevertheless, Rebbe didn't like the idea because it's so complicated, people can easily make a mistake and write it wrongly, and then it's possible. Mm-hmm. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility that Rashbam says is maybe Rebbe doesn't have a problem with a get mekosher in general, but this particular one, the date was buried so deeply among the folds, it was written more deeply than it usually should be. Therefore, he objected that it shouldn't have been done that way because, look, I myself was misled by it, thought that it didn't have a date. Other people might do the same thing.
I thought that his son pointing out something to him maybe made him...
No. Okay, we have a Gemara in Menachos, for example, where Rebbe is not sure about something, two things actually, where Rebbe is not sure about something, and Reb Shimon points it out to him, and Rebbe is happy to hear the explanation also. In Erechin, also in other places, because he objected to the very idea of Shtar Mekusher having been written, or that the date was written in such a way that it could easily be overlooked.
But it may be just for this stuff.
That's the point. That's the point of the first explanation. Rebbe didn't like the idea of a Shtar Mekusher in general. According to the second explanation, he doesn't mind a Shtar Mekusher in general, but this specific one. Amalei, sort of Shimon says to defend himself, Lava Naksavte, I didn't write it. Rabbi Yehuda the tailor wrote it. Why not? He knew how to write a shtar because he was a tailor by profession, but he knew how to write a shtar. Omalei, however, Rebbe tells him, Kloch Meloshen Haraze, stay away from this Loshen Hara.
This is in the Tanya.
That's what brings it in Tanya and Perek Lamed to illustrate the idea how even a person who is, even a person who is a Talmud Chacham and clearly was Oisik Batoto or Avoda or whatever, shouldn't think himself higher than Shoteyam, the Ame Oris and whatever, because he should realize how easily it is, how easy it is to trip up on things, like Reb Shimon tripping up over here. So why Taka is Reb Shimon kind of throwing Rabbi Yehuda Chaita under the bus? Why is he mentioning him at all? So many of them before him say, because he figured if he just says, I didn't write it, Rebbe's going to say, yeah, sure. So he had to say, so he felt he had to say the name in order to, whatever. The point is, maybe he felt that Rebbe wouldn't believe him. If he didn't say, because if he didn't say who wrote it, okay, yeah, you're disclaiming responsibility. Yeah, so who did write it then?
In other words,
so he thought that the only way to clear his name maybe would be by mentioning who actually wrote it. That person actually did. The fact is, Rebbe tells him, you're wrong in doing that.
Right.
You could have just said you didn't write it,
right,
and that would have been enough.
Right.
You didn't have to mention the other person's name.
Right.
There isn't. Now, there is, I'll tell you, an interesting thing in Maskil Eitan, from Yekasiel Green on Tanya, he brings an interesting vort over there from Abyo Khan, which I think he said in the name of the Rebbe. But Alfred Rebbe makes a point of saying over there that Shimon said this to his father. So why does Alfred Rebbe have to add that detail? He says like this, because Rabbi Yoel says like this, or the Rebbe says like this, because Reb Shimon figured if Rebbe is upset about the situation, it means, in other words, it doesn't just reflect badly on me, Reb Shimon. It reflects badly on my father, too, because Brakara Davor. It gives him Agmas Nefesh that his son doesn't know the right thing to do. So he figured, therefore, the right thing to do would be to make sure, as much as possible, to clear his name, and therefore also for his father's sake. In other words, as a matter of Kibbutz Av. And yet, Rebbe tells him, no, but you still made the wrong calculation. You still didn't have to mention Rebbe Yehuda Chaita's name in order to do that.
Very nice. If you could live by this one line in Gemara your whole life, you'd
be able to throw yourself on other people's
name. Yeah. Okay, onward. Zimnin happened. Now, yeah, I mean, there are Meforshim who want to say that maybe, I mean, he says Kloch Meloshon Hara Azeh, maybe it's not full-fledged Loshon Hara, because after all, okay, I mean, you are allowed to write a Shtai Mekusher, and it happens, okay, you write it and in a way that the date can be overlooked or whatever. It's not absolute Loshon Hara, but it's sort of on the way to it, and therefore Rebbe is telling him to stay away from that.
But why did he have to add the details from my answer?
Because he figured that it's important to point that out, so that way Rebbe won't suspect that after all he did write it. Maybe he's
you
just trying
been
to explain
in
as well.
Okay. You say, I didn't do it.
No, okay.
I don't believe you.
Okay.
No, it's not about I didn't do it. He could have said someone else.
But whatever. He figured that he needs to substantiate it, whatever.
Yeah,
and
better your claim is.
Yeah, you could have just said that you didn't write. Okay.
No, someone else who
knew, whatever. Okay. Okay, fine. So that's what's saying. That was Reb Shimon's mistake. Fine. Okay. Zimnin, then another time, have a Yosef Tameh, another time Reb Shimon was sitting in front of his father, the Kaposik Sidra of a Sefer Tehillim, and Rebbe was saying a section of Sefer Tehillim, a Sidra, the Rebbe Negershim explains, means a Sefer of Tehillim, Sefer Rishon, Sefer Sheni, etc. Omar Rebbe, and then when Rebbe finishes, he says, Tamam Yusha Ksavzeh, look how straight and clear the writing in the Sefer Tehillim is.
It's written, handwritten.
Yeah, of course, and then this is 1,000 years before printing. Amalei, so again, Reb Shimon tells him, Lavanar Kasavte Yehuda Chayta Kasve. So again, Reb Shimon says, I didn't write it. It's Yehuda Chayta who wrote it. And again, Rebbe tells him, Amalei, Kloch Meloshon Hara.
Oh, this is after the first episode?
Apparently, but wait. Yeah. No. And again, Rebbe tells him, stay away from the Loshon Hara. So we have to ask, right, what do we mean, Loshon Hara? Bishleim Ahasam, it's a Loshon Hara. I can understand in the first case, it is, after all, a form of Loshon Hara. In what way is it Lashon Hara to say that Yehuda Chaita wrote the Sefer Tehillim in a beautiful handwriting? The answer is Mishum de Rav Dimi, based on what Rav Dimi said. The Tani Rav Dimi Achur de Rav Safra, namely that Rav Dimi, the brother of Rav Safra, taught
a
Braisa that says as follows.
This
is not the famous Rav Dimi, I guess not. He says, L'olam ha'yisafa adam b'tevasa shachavera, a person should not speak of the good qualities of other people, because from speaking of his good qualities, you're going to come to his bad qualities. Now, what does that mean? One second. I mean, there's an obvious question. But it can lead to Lashon Hara.
It can lead.
Now, one second. How is it going to? So the Rashbam says, because when you speak a lot about the praise of a person, then that causes that the people start, not Ein Hara, but people start mentioning also the derogatory things about
it. You're not sure if the person's friends that you're talking to.
So that
if I say, oh, so and so is such a great cook. Oh yeah, well, you know what?
So that's Rashi mentions that in Erchin. There's an entire sugya in Erchin about Lashon Hara, and Rashi over there points out exactly that. When you start talking a lot about the good of somebody, of another person, somebody else in the crowd is likely to say, yeah, but you know, there's after all.
Yeah.
What about the
ads? His burners on all the time.
One second. So now, hold on. There is a lot to talk about this. First of all, the Rambam, when the Rambam passes this, he makes a point of saying that you're not allowed to do it b'fnei soinov, in front of his enemy.
Right.
So which leads Meforshim to ask, in our Gemara, there's no enemies over here. Rebbe's Pashas is not an enemy of Yehuda Chaita. So they give a few different explanations. One is that it means you do it barabim, and inevitably among the rabim there may be enemies of his. They also talk about there's a difference between the Chofetz Chaim, for example, says if the person really is a complete tzaddik, Yutaka are allowed to praise him, because then there's nothing to worry about, but people are going to talk about his bad quality. But besides that, also, there's other explanations as well. Another one is you're allowed to talk about a person's ruchniistic good qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Name, which answers your question. Namely, in other words, here we're talking about the fact that he has a nice handwriting. But for example, that's not necessarily a ruchniistic thing. But for example, we find in Pirkei Avos that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai mentions the shvach of his 5 talmidim, both sur chenim abatipa, afri elatra, etc. And obviously, he's not worried about this. The one reason is among these many reasons is because those are ruchniistic qualities, and those are okay. There are other explanations on this also. The Iyun Yaakov, Anein Yaakov, says an interesting one, that this itself, that you're saying that he has very neat handwriting, has a bit of a derogatory tinge to it. Because it means, therefore, he wasted time that he could have spent learning on having the nice, neat penmanship.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Then there's others as well. Marshall talks about that it is connected with the previous story. Once you mention he has a nice handwriting, then you act to think of the previous story where he wrote a shtar apparently he was a semi-professional writer and didn't write it quite correctly. The Chiddush says something similarly. You're going to look, look, he has such neat penmanship, but wait a minute. So why is it that other time he couldn't write that shtar in a way that that the date should be clearly visible?
Right.
So therefore, there's
find angles.
You can always find angles, exactly. Okay.
Yeah, but from these things, we can learn how to
we can learn how. Care. Okay. Onward. Omer of Amram, Omer Rav. Sholosh Averis, Einadam Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom. There are three Averis that a person is not saved from them every day. We'll talk about this also one second, what this means. Because after all, if you do them all the time, how can they be called Averis? Marsha asked that question. So hold on. Hirhu Avera, having thoughts of Avera. Avera without specification. And the Gemara usually means Znus.
Right.
Number one. The Iyun Tefila. Number two is Iyun Tefila. What is Iyun Tefila? The Shvam says it means that that after a person daven, he thinks to himself, look how well I daven. The Eibishter has got to do what I said, what I just davened for. I daven with such kavanah.
Means
understanding. For one second, Tosfos points that out. But Iyun Tefila, according to the Rashbam, means that after he davens, he's ma'ayim, he thinks into it, look how well I daven. The Eibishter has got to do, he owes me one, he's got to do what I want. There's a verse on that I've heard attributed to one of the chassidim of the Alter Rebbe. I'm not sure which one. I think I've heard it in the name of Reb Shmuel Munkus and others as well, that he used to say, before I became a chassid, I used to think, look at the Eibishter, he's so hard-hearted. People come and they cry their hearts out by slichas for bonei chayo mezoina, and then not everybody gets what they want. How you talking? After I became a chassid, he says, I realized that look what a rachman the Eibishter is, that we go and daven in front of him the way we daven, and he doesn't slap us in the face.
Which means,
in other words, for the way he thought when he was in the snagit is the Rashbam's definition of Iyun Tefila. Look at this, I daven so well, the Eibishter owes me one. He's got to do what I want. As opposed to once you become a chassid, you realize that no, the Eibishter doesn't owe you one. You have to consider, did you really daven? You owe the Eibishter one. Anyway, Tosfos has a problem with that, among other things. Tosfos says because most people aren't guilty of that kind of thing. Most people know good and well that it's davening so well. Therefore, Tosfos says no. Iyun Tefila means the fact that a person doesn't concentrate while they're davening, and that's true of most people. Tosfos even brings from a Yerushalmi a famous thing that one of the Amoraim, Rav Matanya, says a famous expression that the Rebbe used to quote it in Sichos a number of times, that he says, I owe my head. Thanks that when I come to Mordim and davening, it bows automatically, like a muscle memory, basically. Like even this Rav Matanya, one of the Amoraim, is saying that I don't have such kavana in davening that I should remember to bow by Mordim, but already muscle memory does it for me. So you see, in other words, that Iyun Tefila is a very difficult thing.
Okay. Yeah, the Rebbe brings this as the three levels of being connected to the mitzvah.
Yes, right. Okay, and the third one is the Lashon Hara. Question is Lashon Hara. What do you mean? People are not saved every day from saying Lashon Hara? Ela avak Lashon Hara. No, it means avak Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara means that it's not full-fledged Lashon Hara, but it means it's something that could lead to, for example, so the Rashi gives an example, again, from that sugya and Erechin about the dinim of Lashon Hara. For example, if people ask, where can I find fire? Where can I find a lit fire?
Right.
And you say, you can always find by pointing. Now that, in and of itself, that's a neutral statement, but it can be understood. Well, why did you always have a fire by him? Because he's always barbecuing, he's a fresher, he's a, you know. But that's an example of a Avak Lashon Hara.
The Avera is on the person who might think.
No, but you yourself are responsible to not say that.
Well, you started the fire.
You yourself are responsible to not say.
How do you start the fire?
You have to be careful to not say something that other people are going. Whatever. That's one example.
You know how to steer the conversation.
Okay.
You can't prevent people from thinking,
but you have to be careful to say the right thing. Anyway, there's other examples. The Rambam gives another example of a Avak Lashon Hara is you say poor guy. Who would have ever thought? Not poor guy. Whatever. Who would have thought this guy would ever go so low? You don't give the details in what way he went low, but still, another example would be that I don't want to talk about what happened to this guy.
Would be another
example. Whatever, there are various examples of Avak Lashon Hara. So that kind of thing
is
very hard.
I can't tell you both, otherwise we'll be Lashon Hara.
Let's go on. Now, what do we mean, though, Ein Adam Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom? The Marsha asks, after all, if nobody is saved from them every day, how can you call them Aver? And what do you mean, Ein Adam Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom? A tzaddik is not Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom. So actually, you have. There are other mafarshim. I think again, the Iyun Yaakov says it doesn't mean you can never be saved from them. It means you got to work really hard on it. If you work really hard, yeah, you can be nipple man before you. The average person doesn't work to that degree. However, Maharshal has a whole different explanation, which is, he says, we're focused on the word Adam over here. We know of the four words for a human being, Adam, Ish, Gever, and Enosh. Adam is the highest, but you can go beyond Adam. You can be higher than that. Adam represents a person, he says, based on a Gemara and Soita, that a person is composed of Afer, Dam, and Mora. Ashes, blood, and bile. So therefore, ashes represent that a person is a gashmiistic being, and therefore they have therefore they can't concentrate in davening, which is a ruchniistic thing. Dam represents passion, therefore they have hira avera. Bile represents the bitterness that a person has to other people, which causes them to have avak lashon hara. But if a person rises beyond that, if a person rises beyond being an Adam, then yes, he can be Nitzel Man B'Choyon. The Alter Rebbe takes a somewhat similar tack on it, because Alter Rebbe mentions this in Perek Yud Beis, in Tanya, when he's describing what a Beinoni is.
Right.
That we're not saying that a Beinoni actually thinks thoughts of Averus or actually says Lashon Hara or what have you. We mean thoughts of that are constantly coming into his brain. But being a Beinoni, he always is on the alert and pushes them out. So that's Einod Nitzel Man B'Choyim. He's not saved every day on the level of an Adam. He's not saved from them because he has to deal with them, as opposed to a Tzaddik and Tanya, who Taka wouldn't have to deal with them at all.
And did he didn't?
Because the Tzaddik and Tanya is beyond that. Because
Lima de Teira or Bittel Teira is also one of them. Didn't Tosfos bring?
Tosfos doesn't mention that over here. No.
Not here, maybe in Eretz.
I don't know.
There's a
Tosfos
tags on a fourth
okay.
one. No?
I don't know. Anyway. Okay.
So let me ask you a question. If I say about somebody, it's a great Talmud Chacham.
You have to be careful with that because it can cause other people to say. It is a ruchniistic thing, so according to those explanations, it would be fine, but you also have to be careful who your audience is.
Right.
Is there likely to be somebody in that audience who's going to say, yeah, Oishmer Talmud Chacham, let me tell you about
it.
But then you have to be careful. You have to be careful.
Yeah,
that's the point. There's a sefer on the subject. It's called Sefer Chofetz Chaim. You might have heard of it. So if you're concerned and you should be, then Taka learn it. These are dinim. Like you have to know, they have to know, like any other dinim. All right. Anyway, let's go on. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Roiv v'Gezel. Most people are with Gezel. So what does that mean? The Rashbam says it means most people. Because again, we don't mean gezel as in actually holding other people up. What do we mean? In other words, like people rationalize things that they do, that, you know, which are not 100% honest or whatever. Some of the other mafarshim say that it doesn't mean most people. It means most. If you counted up the number of averus that people do, the majority of them would turn out to be involving gezel. So not the majority of people necessarily, but the majority of averus. But again,
most averus.
But it depends. We're saying that the Einon Nitzel Man B'Choyim. One of them is here, Avera, but that's here. Here we're talking about something that you're actually doing.
Is also an Avera.
Here, but it's a different kind. Which are there's Machshava and then there's Maisa. We're talking about Maisa. When it comes to Maisa, Roy Vigezel, we're saying that most the major Avera that people do with Maisa is some form of Gezel. A minority is involving Arayas, the Hakol B'Lashon Hara, and everybody with Lashon Hara. So again, the question is B'Lashon Hara, same thing. Doesn't mean most people are guilty of outright Lashon Hara, but most people are guilty of Avak Lashon Hara.
Not Lashon Hara.
Not Lashon Hara per se, but Avak Lashon Hara, things that can lead to Lashon Hara, like these examples
that
we gave. What's
the lightest Lashon Hara that's not yet Avak Lashon Hara?
I don't know.
Lashon Hara. What's some example of Lashon Hara?
So Lashon Hara would be, for example, saying something derogatory about somebody else. Saying
like so-and-so is
oppressive. Yes,
that's
Lashon Hara. Abak Lashon Hara has fire in his house. Would be Abak Lashon Hara because it leads to that. Yeah.
And also, so-and-so is a huge talent. So are you knowing that you don't like him?
Yes.
So Enemitzo means that you cannot be tshuva?
No, not you can't do tshuva, meaning that, a person, unless he works on himself, is not going to be saved from it. It's inevitably going to happen. So therefore, you can do tshuva. You can do tshuva on anything. First of all, there is. You have the story of Rabbi Yosef and Chetkevitzer, but without even getting into that, you can't maybe, the mamzer is still there in the world, but you can do tshuva. You can do your part. You can still do your part. You can still do tshuva for your part.
That's a bonus story.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but yes, a tshuva person can always do tshuva. Does it necessarily undo the real world effects of what they did? Not necessarily. The person kills Rahman al-Islam, their victim is still dead even after they did tshuva. But still, a person can do tshuva, and that takes care at least of the bein adam l'malchut part. Which reminds me, by the way, as far as these three things, the Maharal says that actually the vort is these three things. You have bein adam l'malchut, bein adam l'chavere, and between a person and himself. That correspond to these three things. Here, avera is between is a person is within a person himself. Yom tefillah is between a person and the Eibishter, and avak lashon hara is between a person and other people.
Oh, nice.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, "Rav Shimon Gamliel lema hakol kamina gamadina." Rav Shimon Gamliel said, "It said as far as the din of right, as far as writing a shtar poshet versus a shtar makusha, everything goes according to the mina gamadina." Question is, that's the question. The Tanakama less than Minig Medina. Doesn't the Tanakama also agree with the concept of Minig Medina? What is the it sounds like Rav Shimon Gamliel saying if there's a Medina where they have a different way of writing a Shtar Parshat or a Shtar Mekusha, then you have to go according to that. Okay, why would the Tanakama disagree with that? Amar Ravashi, so Ravashi says it's like this. But as for the Nehigi Parshot, if it's a place where the local minig is always to use a Shtar Parshot, the Amalei Ovidli Parshot, and a person, let's say, for example, a Malva tells the Sofer or what have you, or he tells the Shluchim who are going to write a get or whatever, he tells him, make me a Shtar Parshot, the Ozel Ovidli Mekusher, and instead the guy goes and makes a Shtar Mekusher, sure, Peda. Obviously, there's no question, then, but it means the guy was Makrid, it must be a Shtar Parshot, because that is the Minig HaMedina. And therefore, he wrote something different than Minig HaMedina and different than what the guy told him. Therefore, it will be possible. And to give an example that Ashbam says, let's say it's a get, it'll be possible for Gershon. On the other hand, Nihigi Mekusha of Amalei Ovidli Mekusha, and if it's the other way around, if it's a place where the Minig is to always use Shtar Mekusha, and he specifically tells him, write me a Shtar Mekusha, but also Ovidli Mekusha, and the guy goes and writes him a Shtar Mekusha, same thing, Peda. Obviously, both the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel will agree that in that case, it's Peda, because Minig HaMedina, and what he told him is to write a certain way. Kitligi, the Machloikas is, but after the Nihigi, the Pasha to Mekusha, the Machloikas would be, what if it's a place where there's no standard thing? Some people write Poshut, some people write Mekusha. But Omalei Ovidli Poshut, and now the Malva or the husband or whatever tells him, go write me a Shtar Poshut, but also Ovidli Mekusha. And instead, this Sofer goes and writes a Shtar Mekusha. Is that valid or not? That's the machlokas of Rav Shimon Gamliel.
Where
the minhag is both. Where there's, right. Marsov of Kpega, namely, the Tanakhama of the Mishnah holds that by saying, write me a Poshut, it was a Kpega. He specifically meant, even though it's true, there are people in our neighborhood who write a Shtar Mekusha, but I specifically want you to write me a Poshut. Therefore, he wrote a Mekusha, therefore the Tanakhama would say it's possible. Well, Marsov of Maramachim Huloi, whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel would hold, no, he's not saying you must write a Shtar Poshut. It means he's telling him, I don't mind if you write a Shtar Poshut. If you want to go to the Tircha writing a Shtar Mekusha, there's up to hate.
You can have both cases. Well,
what if it was the other way around? So what if you had, what if it's in such a place where some people write Poshut, some people write Mekusha? Yeah. What if he were to tell him, write a Mekusha, and the other guy writes a Poshut? The Gemara is not talking about that. The Ritva understands that Rashbam to be saying that in that case it would also be possible. Because he told him to write him a kosher. He told him to write him a kosher. You can't say Mara Makum Hula. You can't say that he means to say, go ahead and write him a kosher, but you could instead write a kosher. Otherwise, you sort of just told him write a kosher. On the other hand, many other Rishonim say that no. In such a case, it would, according to Shimon Gamliel, many other Rishonim say that still you could argue that Mara Makum Hula. He means to say, if you want to write him a kosher, go ahead. And if you don't want to go to that rigmarole and you'd rather just write a kosher, fine, you can do that as well.
I would think that the most common case the one not following order would be if you ask me to write a push, I don't just create it. I want to do this and that. The other thing, you're going to write a push, it's much easier for me.
True, but so the Gemara is not dealing with that, so therefore you have this machlokes that we're showing him whether such a thing would work or not. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, the halacha is like the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, so therefore the halacha is that, yes, it would be possible because you have to go according to, you don't say, I call for Minig HaMedina. Yes, the Minig HaMedina is some people write Poshut, some people write Mekusha, but this guy specifically told you a Poshut, therefore you can't go and say, I'd rather write a Mekusha, or vice versa. Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
If that one, Kovel Chomer, if you wrote a Pasha and you were told to write a Kusher, because it's easier.
Maybe not. Okay. Amar Abaya. So Abaya says in this connection, I'll give you a list of Tanoim who hold this concept, which as usual, the usual rule is we know Ein Halacha Keshita. When we have a list of Tanoim like that or all the certain way, it means to say the Halacha is not like them. And indeed, the Halacha is not like any of these Tanoim that we're going to list. Amar Abaya, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon, Rav Elazar, Kulu Svir Lehu Mara Makom Hulai. Each of them, in their own case, in a different case, says that there's a concept of Mara Makom Hulai, that you can say about a person that even though he gave instructions to do such and such, he doesn't mean that the instructions have to be followed to the letter. You can say Mara Makom Hulai. He just meant to say you can do it that way, but you don't must do it that way. Mara Makom. Means he's showing them the place. So, because one of the examples we're going to have is actually that. Rav Shimon Gamliel Hadamara. Rav Shimon Gamliel is what we just said, that even though you told him to write a kosher, and he voluntarily went and did him a kosher, or according to the Rishonim that it works the other way around also, then the same thing in reverse, he didn't mean to say you must write a kosher, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, he just said you could write a kosher, but I don't mind if you write him a kosher as well, whereas Tanakhama disagrees with that, so yeah.
So that means,
Mara Makom Hulai, that it means he didn't mean it must be followed to the letter, it just means you can do it that way. Rav Shimon, where do we see Rav Shimon says such a thing? The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Kiddushin, that you have a case over there, for example, that a man and a woman agree that he's going to be Makadosh over the silver dinner. In the event, now we're talking about the Kiddushin is being done through a Shliach, so when her Shliach goes and receives, when her Shliach comes to receive the Kiddushin, instead he gives the Shliach a gold dinner, and then he brings it to her. So now, does that work or not?
No.
So the Tanakhama over there says that no. But Rav Shimon says that it does. In Kiddushin. Rav Shimon says, if he misled her for the good, then she is Mekudeshet. In other words, according to him, you swapped out, instead of giving her a silver dinner, you gave her Shliach a gold dinner. Fine. The Kiddushin are still valid. Now, the Rashbam does point out, we have other cases over there, for example, we had a case over there, let's say, where he's Mekadosh or Almanas, that he's a Levi, and it turns out that he's a Kohen, or vice versa, or whatever. That, even if Shimon agrees, wouldn't work, because she could say, for example, it's too big a shoe to fill, basically. I don't want to be married. Yes, a Kohen is an upgrade in Yuchsin, but that's too high for me, basically. But when it comes to silver and gold, Rav Shimon holds that would work.
Put your force to bad money.
Yeah. Okay. Rav Elazar, where do we see Rav Elazar holds to this concept? The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin. That Rav Shimon holds of it, and now Rav Elazar holds of this concept, Mara Makom Hulai. That just because you said, that just because you gave instructions for something to be done, doesn't mean it can't be done in a different way. So Rav Elazar, if a woman says to her Shliach, receive my get for me in such and such a place, so she wants the shliach to daf to go to a certain place to receive the get from the husband or from the husband's shliach. The kibla lam makamacher, and he received it for in a different place. Pasul, then it would be pasul. But Rav Elazar makshir, but Rav Elazar says it's kosher. Same idea. Mar sava kpeda, the Tanakama, which is the halacha, holds that by saying receive it for me in such and such a place means she's makbid. It must daf to be in that place, nowhere else. But Mar Sava, whereas Rav Elazar holds Mara Makom Hulai, it just means that she's saying, I'm showing you the place. This is the place where you're likely to find my husband and receive the get. Doesn't mean that she would necessarily object to him meeting him and receiving the get someplace
else.
Again, the halacha is like the Chachamim, yeah, because again, Ein Halacha Keshita. The halacha is not like a list of Tanoim who hold a certain way. One reason for it is it's brought in the Sfarim of Klal Yashar. One reason behind that is because not necessarily, even fine, all three of them hold of this idea of Mara Makom Hulai, not necessarily would each of them agree that it applies in the other one's cases. For example, Rav Shimon Gamliel says it here as far as the Shtar Parshat and Mekosher. Not necessarily would Rav Shimon and Rav Elazar agree with him as far as this case of Shtar Parshat and Mekosher. They might hold there's some distinction between their cases and this case over here. So it's not like you have a majority over here either. You only have Rav Shimon Gamliel against the Chachamim. You don't even have necessarily the other two with him. Okay. All right. Then the Mishnah had said, Poshet Shekosed by Eid Echad. We said in the Mishnah that a Shtar Poshet is supposed to have two Eidim, at least. A Shtar Mekosher is supposed to have at least three. We said if it has any less than that, then it's Poshet. So the Mishnah had said, Poshet Shekosed by Eid Echad. That if a Shtar Poshet, we said because we wanted to make a Shtar Mekosher more complicated. First, we said we tried to learn it from Psukim, Afishnei Edim, Afishlosha Edim, and then we ended up saying that no, the whole thing of a Shtam Bekusha is the Rabbanon, but the Chachamim wanted to make a Shtam Bekusha more complicated, so that it'll take longer to write for the hot-tempered Kohenim, etc., and therefore we wind up that it has to have three Edim, and if it's any less than that, it's going to be possible. So the Mishnah had said that if a Shtar Mekusher has two Edim, or a Shtar Poshet has only one, then it'll be possible. The question is, Vishlema Mekusher should cause a Shnei Edim possible. Okay, I can understand why a Shtar Mekusher, why the Mishnah has to tell us that a Shtar Mekusher that has two Edim sign that it is possible. It's true. The Mishnah needs to tell us that. Because otherwise you would think to say, since generally a shtar with two edim sign that it is kosher, hachanami kosher, so fine, you would think over here it's kosher as well, and therefore the Mishnah has to point out to us, don't think that way. It's a shtar of kosher, it's got to have three, no less than three. Ela kosher shakasa by eid echad, but you're telling me that in the Mishnah that a shtar kosher only has one eid written in it, and that it's possible. Pshita, well, obviously it's possible. A shtar, by definition, has to have two edim on it. So Abaye says, you're right. The reason why the Mishnah has to tell us that a shtar posher with one aid is possible is talking about a case. Let's say you have one aid who's signed on the shtar and another aid who's only saying his aid is verbally. So you would think maybe you could combine the two of them. The fact is, he's not signed on the shtar. Well, you would think that you could still combine them. You could just say, one second, we'll talk one second about different beforeshim, about different ways that they understand this case. But on the surface, we're talking about, so you have Reuven signed on the shtar, you have Shimon coming to Beis Din and saying, I was there when this loan was taken out, etc. You would think you could combine them. And therefore, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that you can't.
Right. Can that even be a hakam?
Right. Now, the Rashbam takes the view that nevertheless, the point is, the shtar itself is not entirely possible. You still can use the shtar to a certain extent. You can use it to collect from Bnei Chorin. The loiva is not going to be able to say, I already paid it off. So at least to that extent, it's a valid shtar. You just can't use it for collecting from the Shabbatim. Tosfos discusses that, and Tosfos and many other Rishonim discuss that and say that no, they hold that it means that that it means everything. It means a completely possible shtar if it has only shvadim and echorim and the whole 9 yards. Yeah. Unless you have now, one second though, there are a lot of details in this, and you can see there's a long Tosfos over here, Omar Abaye, that goes into a lot of ins and outs of this. No, we're not going to learn the whole Tosfos, but I'll tell you outside as I usually do a couple of points from it. First of all, Tosfos says a couple of possibilities. One possibility is that what we're talking about is the second aid. He's not just saying I was there when the loan was taken out. He's saying, or that I know Ados, let's say, for example, at some point the lawyer came to me and told me that he actually owes this money, which is called Odisa, which we talked about before. We'll talk about it again in Sanhedrin, but it's a shame that such a thing works. No, here we're talking about the second aid says I was there when the shtar was given from the lawyer to the Malka. Nonetheless, though, we're still saying, according to Abaya, that nevertheless it still doesn't work.
He says it was there when the shtar was given.
So even though only Reuben is signed on it, for whatever reason, Shimon didn't sign on it, but Shimon is saying, I was there together with Reuben when the shtar was actually handed over. You would think that should be good enough. No, Abaya is still saying
that. When you have the shtar with one aid signing, when you spoke about that could be used for certain things, or maybe it couldn't.
Right.
Are you talking universally?
What do you mean universally? I mean, here we're talking about Shtachai. What else are we talking about?
No, I mean, according to all opinions, you can use a shtar with one aid to say that the...
No, according to some opinions, a shtar with one aid is completely possible. You can't use it for anything at all. Yeah, most
things good enough to do certain things.
No, only according to the Rashbam. Well, one second. We haven't gotten to the halacha yet. We're going to have the opinion of Amemar, which differs with Abaya. You have, again, according to the Rashbam, you can't use it for Meshubadim, but you can use it for Bnei Chorin. According to everybody else, and Abaya is saying it's completely possible. But now we're going to have, in a second, we're going to have Amemar's opinion, which is going to be different. So we'll get to that in a second.
Okay. We have all these opinions, we just go by the
Chachamim. No, well, here with Amaroyim, you don't have Chachamim. I mean, you have, you're going to see in a second. Now, the halacha is like Amemar, but wait. Anyway. There's other explanations as well. Some of the Rishonim say that we do mean the shtar has two physical signatures on it. For example, the Ramban, I think, says this, that it means, however, for whatever reason, we were only able to be Mekayim one of the two signatures. So there are two sets. So there are two actual signatures on it, but we will only be able to be Mekayim one of them. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a different explanation.
Isn't that obvious?
No, it's not so obvious. I mean, you have two Adim signed on it. You would think maybe it should be valid. It isn't. You would think
one. It's kosher.
You would think. The fact is that okay. And by the way, the Tosfos points out over here, and in Shulchan Aruch this is brought as halacha, that another detail over here. What if the second aid, even though he's not signed on the shtar, if he says, we actually made a kinyan about this matter, and the malva did not ask me to write to sign on the shtar. Then the fact that he's saying that we made a kinyan is, even though he's not signing the shtar, is enough to make it a kosher shtar. Yeah.
A kosher shtar, but in a kinyan handkerchief would be.
Yeah. Okay. Onward. Amemar achshav ve'edach b'ksav ve'edach adalpeh. Amemar, which is a later generation than Abaya, declared it kosher. Here's the next generation. He declared a shtar kosher if it had one aid written on the shtar and one balpeh.
Abaya's fourth generation.
Abaya's fourth generation, I'm Amar's
fifth. Fifth?
He's one of the Rebbeim of Rav Ashi. Now, again, the Rashbam says that Amema would say it means completely kosher. You can even use it for Nechasa Meshubadim. Everybody else says no. Amema would say that it's kosher for collecting from Bnei Chorin. It's kosher that the guy can't say parait, but not from Meshubadim. For that, you need actually two Adim sign up. That's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch.
With you?
No, again, if you were only able to be Mekayim one eight, then it amounts to the same thing. If you're Mekayim both, yeah. Okay. Amalei Rav Ashi la'meima v'hoda Abaya mai. So Rav Ashi asked Amema, what are you going to do with what Abaya said? Abaya is just explaining the Mishnah to say that the reason why the Mishnah has to tell us a shtar with only one eight is possible is for this case where you have one b'chsav and one b'alpeh. Amalei, la'meima answers, lo shmi'li, I didn't hear it. Kaloima, which is as much as to say, lois ridoli, I don't hold of this statement of Abaya. Meaning, he's saying, I didn't hear it as something attributed to Abaya because I can't believe Abaya would have said such a thing, basically. I don't hold of it. Okay, El Akasha Machnitin. Well, then you have the question, how do you understand our Mishnah? Why is the Mishnah making a point of saying that a shtar kosher with one aid is possible if it should be fairly obvious? And according to Amema, after all, if it has only one aid signed on it and the other one balpeh, it is kosher. The answer is, why should the Mishnah have to say that? The Mishnah could just tell us, a shtar makusher that has two adim is possible, fine, we need that siddush, and just leave it at that, and we would understand ourselves that a shtar makusher with one aid is possible. The reason is because the Mishnah is telling us a different point. Hokamash malon, because the point the Mishnah wants to tell us, the shnayim makusher ka'edach of the pasher, that having two adim on a shtar makusher is exactly the equivalent of having one aid on a pasher. Namely, ma hosam psula d'araisa. What does it mean? Ma hosam, just like one aid on a shtar pasha. Ma hosam psula d'araisa. Just like when it comes to a shtar pasha that has only one aid on it. We're not talking about here when there's a second aid, balpeh, or whatever. We're just talking about plain and simple that there was only one aid present who signed on it. Yeah, nothing else. And then the shtar is psula d'araisa because you need two aidim. At hochanami psula d'araisa. Here also it is posel d'araisa. Now, what do we mean posel d'araisa? We just said at the beginning of the parak that the whole concept of a shtar makusher was only d'rabbanan. So you have a few different approaches on it among the Rishonim. The Rashbam says what it means is, it doesn't mean it's actually posel d'araisa. It means the Chachamim imposed on it a psul d'araisa. For example, if such a shtar, a shtar makusher, is used as a get and only has two signatures on it, even though mid'araisa it would be kosher, the Chachamim treat it as if it's posel, and she's not migurash. And if she were to remarry, then the child would be considered a mamzer, etc. Yeah.
That's for a star.
Of course, that's what we're talking about.
That has two
adim on it. Instead of, right. Tosfos says
that Ravana just do that, impose a level of d'oraisa.
Okay, I'll tell you. The Yad Rama has an interesting take on it. He says, because it's like this. When you get down to it, we learned at the beginning of the parak, shtar makusher is signed on the back. Midaraisa, such a thing should not even be considered a valid shtar at all. For the shtar has to be signed at the bottom. Only midrabbanan.
The Torah says the shtar.
No, it doesn't say in so many words, but that's the implication. A shtar should be signed at the bottom. The Chachamim are the ones who came up with the concept of shtar makusher and said it should be signed on the back.
Right.
Therefore, only if it's done according to their instructions is it considered a valid shtar and therefore, for example, a valid debt. If you don't do it according to their instructions, if you do only two adim, then that's it. It goes back to the way it was originally. We midaraisa, such a thing is not considered a shtar at all. Therefore, no get. That's the Yad Rama's explanation of it. Anyway, Tosfos takes it a little bit differently. That it's not we're not saying that the shtar is posel d'oraisa. We mean that it'll be posel d'rabbanan. We just mean, in other words, that we mean that if it was a posher, it would be d'oraisa. So therefore, we're calling it the same thing when it's a shtar kosher, even though technically it's posel only d'rabbanan and the blah and the child would be mamzer d'rabbanan, etc. Okay. Heda, the Gemara says.
What happened to that child?
Possible Rabbanan means exactly that. It means they're not allowed to. It means they can only marry another. It means they can only marry another Mamzer Rabbanan, basically. Or
they can't even marry.
They can't marry a Mamzer. That's right. Indeed. Yeah.
Still, okay. I'd rather be a Mamzer Rabbanan.
Okay. Heda. And okay. So Amema says, I can prove this to you. I can prove this to you. That if you have two aids, that the Mishnah wants to tell us that if you have two aids on a shtar kosher, it's completely possible that that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not trying to tell us the point that a shtar kosher with one aid on it is possible. We would realize that ourselves. Rather, the Mishnah is trying to make a comparison between that and a kosher with two aids. I can prove that to you on the basis of the following story. That a shtar kosher with two is exactly the equivalent as a shtar kosher with one. They're both equally possible. Namely, the Shochu Mitam Chavraya Rav Yirmiyah. The Chachamim sent the following question to Rav Yirmiyah. Mitam means from Eretz Yisrael, by the way. Usually it means a question they sent from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. Here they're all in Eretz Yisrael. So some of the Mephoshim take out the word Mitam. Some of them have a different gear, so it takes out the word Mitam, and it just means that they sent the question to Rav Yirmiyah. We learned earlier in the Sefer, so we learned all the way back in the second Perek, that there was a point when Rav Yirmiyah was thrown out of this Medrash because of the questions that he was asking. We'll have a case over there with the bird with one leg inside 50 amos and one leg outside. But still, they had to ask him this question because they needed the answer. They asked him as follows. They didn't know the answer themselves. Eidach ha-biksav ve-eidach ha-rapeh, exactly this case that we were describing before. If you have a shtar with one aid, signed on the shtar and the other aid only verbal, shtar partial. Mahu she-itztarfu, what would be the din? Can you combine them or not? And they continued the question as follows. Alibidatanak, now, you have a machloikus related to this concept in Sanhedrin. We also had it briefly earlier in our Masechta, in the third parak. We have a case over there. What happens if, two Edim that both know that Reuven owes Shimon a certain amount of money. But Reuven is saying that he saw Levi borrowing from Yehuda on Monday. And Shimon is saying he saw Levi borrowing from Yehuda the same amount on Tuesday. Does that combine? Do we say, after all, that tells us for sure that Reuven definitely owes Shimon $100, or maybe not?
We
have some machlokes. The Tanakama in Sanhedrin says that it doesn't work. They both have to see it at the same time. And Rabbi Shimon ben Kocha says no, even Bezeh Chazeh. He says even Bezeh Chazeh. He says they do have to come and say Eidus at the same time. Then we have a third opinion over there of Nathan, who says they don't even have to say Eidus at the same time. But according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karfa, yes, one of them can see that he saw the loan take place on Monday. The other one can say he saw it take place on Tuesday. And they can come to Basin on Wednesday and say, between the two of us, we know that Reuven owes Shimon $100.
That's according to
Rabbi Yeshua ben Karfa. According to the Chacham, that wouldn't work. So I'll leave it to Tanakama, the Rabbi Shoban Korcha, Loti Boilach. So if you're going to go according to the Tanakama against Rabbi Shoban Korcha, then you have no question. There's no reason to ask a question. They say that even if you have two Edim that are written on the Shtar and two others who are only saying verbally, and they're not necessarily at the same time, that they don't combine. So obviously, then for sure, they would say that they would say you go according to the two that are the class. But the point is, you don't say that you can't combine them into one aedus. You can't have one member of one group and the other of the other group, let's say. So then obviously, so by the same logic, obviously, then if you have a shtar that has one aed written on it and one verbal, obviously, according to the Chachamim there, that wouldn't work. Because we see they don't allow Edom to be combined at all if they weren't at the same time. So again, you have a good deal of discussion among the Rishonim how exactly you have a lot of discussion among the Rishonim that it's not exactly the same. In fact, you have the Raiva who changes the gears over here and says the question would be that you don't even need to ask according to the Tanakama against Rav Nosson. namely Rav Nosson, who says that you don't need the two Edim to say Edus at the same time. You can have one Ed give Edus today and the other one give Edus tomorrow, and it'll still combine. He says that would be the relevant question over here. Most of the other Rishonim who have the Girsa that were saying the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, they would explain, for example, Tosfos mentioned on Amud Aleph that we're talking about that he's saying Edim Nesira, that he's talking about Edus, that he saw the Shtar being handed over, in which case it was at the same time. Or you have some of the other Rishonim say that the Gemara is making a Kavachom over here. Madoch, they would say that it doesn't work if the two Edim saw at different times. How much more so it wouldn't work if you have some of them signing the Shtar and some Balfe. Okay. Anyway. Right, but the Gemara would be making a Kavachom. Ela kitz boilach halib de Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. So you have to ask the question according to Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. Do we say shnayim b'ksav or shnayim al pehu de mitzavi? Do we say, according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, only if you have both edim or b'ksav, or both edim or b'al peh, then they can combine? Avol edecha b'ksav ve'echad al peh lo mitzavinan. Maybe even Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha would not say that you can combine one ed b'ksav and one b'al peh. He would say, if you have two edim b'al peh, one who saw the loan on Sunday and the other one who saw it on Monday, then you can combine them. But not where one of them signed it on Sunday and the other one is only saying that he saw it verbally on Monday. That wouldn't work once Rabbi Shimon Karcha. Or maybe Rabbi Shimon Karcha would say there's no difference. Maybe you can combine them. That was the question. So we see, in other words, the point we see from the story that in fact that was a subject of discussion. Therefore it makes sense that our Mishnah would be telling us something about that as well.
Oh yeah.
That would be right. The Chiddush of our Mishnah. Sholach Lahu, so Rabbi Yumi sent them back a response as follows. Ani eni kedai sheshlachtem li. I'm not worthy for you to send such a question to me. Ela kach da'at Talmidchem noita sheitzdarku. However, the opinion of your Talmud, by which he meant himself, leans towards the idea that they should be able to combine. So therefore, we see from that story that this was a subject of discussion, and therefore we can say that our Mishnah is telling us this concept as well. According to Amemar, we would say the Mishnah also is implying that such a thing can be valid. The Mishnah is not telling us like Abaya. Abaya would have said that the Mishnah is implying such a thing is possible.
Right.
But since we see that Rabbi Yirmiyah says not like that, and Rabbi Yirmiyah is an Amora and he can't argue with a Mishnah, of necessity we would have to say that no, you don't understand the Mishnah like a buyer. You understand it rather like I, a Meimar, am doing. Namely, the Mishnah is not trying to tell us a Chiddush that a Shtar with one aid signed in it is possible. Such a thing would actually be kosher. All the Mishnah is trying to do is draw a comparison between a Shtar with only one aid signed in it and no other aid versus a Shtar Makusha with two aidim signed in it and no other aid. That both of them are equally possible.
So you're saying that one star with one aid?
That a star with one aid and no other aid in
is possible.
But implying, but if there is another aid, even if it's about there, it could be kosher. And that's what Rabbi Yumi is saying. Omalei, however, Ravashi says to him, not necessarily is that a proof, because anan hachi machninim, because we actually learned that story a little bit differently. The Shochalei Chavraya Rabbi Yirmiyah, we learn that the Chachamim sent to Rabbi Yirmiyah the following question. Again, we know they sent him a question, but we hold that it was a different question. The question was rather as follows. Shnayim she'idu, if you have two people gave edus, echad be'beistin zeh ve'echad be'beistin zeh, one gave edus in this beistin, the other one gave edus in another beistin. Mao shi'avo, beistin, etzo beistin, v'yitzdarku. Can we now have the dayanim of the two batidinim come together and combine the two edus in that they heard and therefore decide the case? And again, we can ask a little bit of the Tanakhama that Rav Nosson loisi bo'iloch. If you go according to the Tanakhama of Rav Nosson against Rav Nosson, again in that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, then you can't do that. Then there's no question. Dr. Lebachad based in Anami Lemstafi, because the Tanakhama there says that even one based in, you can't do that. They would say that if one aid came on Monday and the other one came on Tuesday, it still doesn't combine. How much more so if it was one aid in one place and the other in the other place? Again, the Ravid flips it around and says that maybe we're talking here with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, who says that they saw at different times. But anyway, rather, the question has to be a coincidence of nothing. Do we say b'chad be'dinahu d'mitzdarfi? Do we say maybe he would combine the two edim across two different days, but they were in one bestin? Ava b'trei be'dinahoi, but lo mitzdarfi. But maybe they don't combine when the edus was given in two different
bestin. 2 days for one bestin,
but not one day for two b'dinim. Yeah. Aduma Lo Shno. Maybe there's no difference. Maybe Rav Nachman would accept
2 days for 2 days.
Or whatever. 1 day for two bata dinim. Two days for two bata dinim. Yeah, whatever. V'shalach lehu. And according to this version, again, Rav Yirmi has sent them back a message. Ani eini kedai shatim shlachtem. I'm not worthy for you to send me such a question. But the opinion of your Talmud, meaning me, it leans towards the idea that they should combine. According to Rav Nachman.
Yeah. Why is he coming to that opinion?
Because he says that was what he figured out logically, that Rav Nachman wouldn't make that distinction. Ma Bachiyama says a third version of what the give and take was. The question they sent Rav Yirmiya was as follows. Shnayim shnei idur beveistin zeh. If you have two edim who gave edus in one beistin, v'chozru ve'idur beveistin zeh. Then those same two edim went and testified in another beistin, and then a third one as well. Mefarshim say, ma'u shi'yavet echem mikol beistin. They did a third time in a third beistin. They went to the beistin of Crown Heights and gave edus. Then they went to a beistin in Borough Park and gave edus. Then they went to a beistin in Flatbush and gave edus. Now the question is, ma'u shi'yavet echem mikol beistin v'itzkauhu. Can we have now that one Dayan from Crown Heights and one Dayan from Borough Park and one Dayan from Flatbush will get together and be able to decide the case? So again, I'll live it up north and loyti boy. According to Rav Nachman, there's no question that you can do it. If he says that you can even combine Edim, who came on different days to give Edus and Basin, how much more so he would say that different Dayonim from different Bapadinim can combine, since they all heard the same Edus? Rather, you have to ask the question, according to the Tanakhama, who goes against Rav Nachman. Do we say Edim who delay mitzafinan, abo Dayonim mitzafinan? Do we say we can't combine together Edim, but maybe they would agree we can combine together Dayonim from different Bapadinim? Aduma lo shno, maybe there's no difference.
Between
Edim and Dayan. And they would say both are possible. Again, Sholach Lahu, and again, Rav Yirmiya sent them a message, Ani eini kedai shatam shlachtem. I'm not worthy that you sent me such a question. Elakach dach hamid chamnoitza, but the opinion of your Talmud leans towards the idea, sheitzauhu, that they should combine. That's a third opinion of what Rav Yirmiya answered them. A fourth one, Ravina Amar Hochi Shokhulei, Ravina says it's the following question they asked him. If you have a base din of three dayonim that sat down to milkayim ashtar, who met echadman, and one of the dayonim died after the edim gave edus. So they gave edus, so the three dayonim were still alive. Before they had a chance to sign on the kiyum, on the asharta, one of the dayonim died. So the question is, Srichil Michtav, do they have to write at the beginning of, do they have to write in their kiyum the following nusach, the Moisef Tlosa Havena, we were sitting at the basin of three, the Chabloi Sohi, and now one is not present because he passed away. Do they need to write that? Because otherwise people are going to wonder, what do you mean? You only have two signatures at the bottom. They're going to think it was an improper basin that did it. Oh, boy, or maybe you don't need to do it. Shalach Lahu, so he sent them, Ani eini kedai shatav shlachtem li, I'm not worthy that you sent me such a question. Elakach das tamid chamnoita, should srichim lamichtav, they do have to write the most of flotta kachada aven, the most of flotta aven of a chad loisoi, that there were three of us and one of them passed away. And the Gemara finishes off, Baal da, ailu, the Rav Yirmiya bebe medrisha. For this, that Rav Yirmiya answered them properly, but derech eretz, they brought him back into the Beit Medrash, after that story from earlier in the Masechta. So now, the original question was, he had asked, what if you have a bird, whether that you found over there, a bird that's not capable of flying yet, and you find it with one leg within 50 yamas and the other leg outside 50 yamas. So Rashi said over there that he's asking questions, he's just being matriach them with questions that are not going to happen in real life. Tosfos says it's rather because he's arguing with Midas Chachamim. The Chachamim established that such a bird can't go more than 50 yamas. He's making it sound like I don't fully believe in the Midas of the Chachamim. Now when he answered in this way, I need any kedai shlach them leave, and they realize he can come back in. There are explanations actually from Hassan Sofer and also from Rabbi Yolei Tzintz that explain which of these cases over here is actually the word. We have four different opinions, what the question and answer was, and how that connected, how Gapta that made them realize that it's time to bring them back in. So the Hassan Sofer, for example, says, focuses on the last one that we said over here. He explains that basically the question boiled down to, you have two different things that are needed to make a chazaka over here. One, that there was a kiyum of the shtar, and the other, that there were actually three people here originally, even though you see only two signatures.
Who said that?
The Chassam Sefer talks about this in his Chedushin. So he says, the question over there about the bird involved two chazakas. Rabbi Yemi wasn't saying that, I don't believe in the words of Chachamim. He was arguing that when you find such a bird, you should be able to keep it, because you should be able to argue we have two potential chazakas involved over here. Number one, not necessarily the people. When a person measures 50 amas, do they actually measure it literally to the inch? Maybe this bird is taka within the 50 amas, is taka outside 50 amas. And even if not, who says it goes to the, who says that it comes from the roiv of, oh no, the other chachamim said that you have, first of all, that not necessarily do you measure so accurately. You think that one leg of the bird is outside 50 amas. Maybe it's really within 50 amas. Even if you're going to argue that not, still maybe it flew there, it is a bird that can fly maybe. Maybe it came there from the nearest shoiva, from the nearest bird house. Rabbi Yemiya didn't want to accept that concept, therefore they threw him out. Now, we have another case involving two chazakas where he says, I agree that you need both chazakas in order for the shtar to be valid. You need to actually write over there to make it very clear that they had a basin of three for a proper kiyum, and therefore once they saw that, then they realized, okay, well then obviously he retracted from his old opinion. He now accepts the opinion of the other chachamim. Therefore, we can have him back in.
Okay.